실전 모의고사 3회
18. Dear Mr. Mayor, In the 4 years that I've worked for you, you've been nothing but supportive and encouraging. And the faith you've shown in me has made a real difference in my performance and job satisfaction. To think that I may have damaged that relationship because of a lack of attention to detail saddens me more than I can say. I make no excuse. It was more than a simple typo. It was not just an oversight. I ordered and committed the company to something they were not prepared to act on. I have tried to be a valuable asset to you, but clearly I did not live up to your expectations. I hope you would be willing to give me a chance to prove that this was just a mistake. Sincerely yours, Lisa Breckenridge.
He left the restaurant and started up the hill toward the small park where they had arranged to meet. As he walked, he noticed 2 military policemen who were crossing the street and seemed to be following him. He picked up his pace. He did not dare turn around. He looked to his right and saw their reflection in a shop window. They were now just a few paces behind. His heart began beating faster and faster, and he thought he could hear their footsteps. Just then, as he crossed an alley and approached a tall brick building, a large group of music students began flooding onto the sidewalk, carrying horn and string instrument cases of all shapes and sizes. He made his way through them as quickly as possible and entered the building. Though inside, his heart was still racing.
Food marketers are ingenious at turning criticisms of their products into new ways to sell slightly different versions of the same processed foods. They simply reformulate to be low fat, have no trans fat, or to contain fewer ingredients, and then boast about their implied healthfulness, whether the boast is meaningful or not. They don't tell us the whole truth, that removing the fat from foods doesn't necessarily make them non-fattening. Carbohydrates can also make you fat, and many low and non-fat foods boost the sugar level to make up for the loss of flavor. When corn oil and chips and sugary breakfast cereals are all said to be good for your heart, the food marketers can use really big type for the health claims and then print the disclaimers in tiny type.
21. Every day, young children become aware of and consider the mathematical dimensions of their world. They compare quantities, encounter patterns, travel in space, and deal with real problems, such as balancing a tall block building or sharing a bowl of crackers fairly with a playmate. Young children use mathematics to make sense of their world outside of school and to build a solid foundation for success in school. Mathematics helps children think about things, organize experiences, try to obtain order, and search for patterns. It requires children to reason and solve problems. At a very early age, young children play with concepts of size, number, shape, and quantity. They learn that there are objects that can be moved and connected together, the beginning of mathematical knowledge.
22. Parents are people first, and there is evidence that those who are fulfilled and contented as individuals are better able to function effectively as parents than those who are disappointed in their personal lives. It is evident that the support one parent gives to the other facilitates the development of the parenting role as well as optimizing conditions for nurturing the child. 48% of mothers report that their spouse or partner is the primary source for emotional support for parenting. Although the primary adult relationship may be with the marriage partner or cohabiting adult, the adult's life may be crisscrossed with a network of adult relationships, parents, friends, and close relatives. In fact, many parents also help arrange for their own parents' health or living conditions, and must maintain healthy and cooperative relationships with friends and close relatives. The relationship with one's child is an extremely important relationship, but it begins in the context of relationships with other adults.
23. Smart technology is now widely used in sport to find and recruit talent, as well as monitor and improve performance, both for the amateur and the professional. It's now possible to get a basketball with over 200 built-in sensors that provide player and coaches with detailed feedback on performance. In tennis, a system called Slam Tracker can record a player's performances, providing real-time statistics and comprehensive match analytics. If you've ever watched rugby, you may have wondered what the lump is between the player's shoulder blades. It's a GPS tracking system that allows the coaching staff to assess performance in real time. The device will measure the player's average speed, whether the player is performing above or below their normal levels, and heart rate to identify potential problems before they occur. All of these technological applications can help coaches avoid injury and assist in making appropriate substitution decisions. Similar technology exists in the English Premier League and is used by many Olympic sports, such as cycling.
The above graph shows the popularity of three selected pastime activities: reading books, watching TV, and listening to music among Generation Z, Millennials, Generation X, Boomers, and the Silent Generation. First of all, watching TV is the most popular pastime activity among the three pastime activities across generations except Generation Z and the Silent Generation. Among millennials, watching TV is the most favored pastime activity, with listening to music being the least favored. Among the silent generation, on the other hand, reading books is the most popular pastime activity, immediately followed by watching TV. Listening to music is the least popular pastime activity among Generation X, Boomers, and the Silent Generation. Reading books is the least popular pastime activity among Generation Z and Millennials, but becomes more and more popular with older generations.
25. Alessandro Volta was born on February 18, 1745, in Como, Italy. Like many 18th century scientists, including the American Benjamin Franklin, Volta became fascinated with the subject of electricity and decided to focus his research activities on a detailed investigation of the mysterious natural phenomenon. In 1774, he received an appointment as a professor of physics at the Royal School in Como. To better support his study of electricity, in 1775, he invented the electrophorus. A precursor of the induction machine, Volta's electrophorus was a device capable of generating static electricity. The device consisted of a disc that was given a negative charge by friction and a metal plate that was charged by induction when in contact with the disc. In 1779, Volta received an appointment to become a professor of physics at the University of Pavia. He accepted this appointment and remained in this position for the next 25 years.
26. 2020 AAC Poster Dog Contest. Anchorage Animal Care, AAC, is announcing its annual Poster Dog Contest. The winning dogs will be the next AAC poster dogs for the dog licensing campaign in 2020. This contest is open to any licensed dogs and their people currently living in Anchorage. The family of the winning dog will receive a free photo session for their dog with local photographer David Jensen. Rules: only pictures of dogs may be submitted. The pictures must be emailed to posterdog@acc.org. Minimum of one photo, maximum of four. The owner's name, address, and telephone number, along with the dog's name, age, and breed must be included. A short description of why your dog should be chosen as poster dog must be included, 500 words or less. All pictures must be received by Friday, November 30th, 2019. Please call us at 123-4567 with any questions.
27. Birthday parties at the Wildlife Discovery Center. We provide an entertaining and educational experience on-site at the Wildlife Discovery Center for birthdays. Parties can be held on Sundays between the hours of 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. Minimum age is 4 years old. Each 90-minute party includes tables and chairs in the hay barn, adult supervision, a 30-minute wildlife program featuring live animals, illustrations of our animals, and crayons for coloring. Note, refreshments, decorations, and other party-related items are the responsibility of the host. Fees, up to 25 people, including children and adult, resident fee, $245, non-resident fee, $280. Up to 50 people, including children and adult, resident fee, $305, non-resident fee, $400. For more than 50 people, please email Don Bobdale at dbdale@wdcenter.com to discuss the fee.
If a person reads very slowly, word by word, he will be classified as an inefficient reader, even though he may do well on comprehension. If, on the other hand, he is the most rapid reader on record but does not comprehend what he reads, he will be designated as a very poor or inefficient reader. The statement is often made that rapid readers also have superior comprehension of what they read. This has been stated or written in such a way that many people have generalized that rapid reading causes improved comprehension. It is more likely that rapid readers as a group are highly skilled in all facets of reading and are simply highly efficient readers. They are probably more flexible readers and read more widely. Maybe they have a wider background or reading interests than do slower readers.
Our need for excessive attention is that ego-centered part of us that says, "Look at me, I'm special. My story is more interesting than yours." It's that voice inside of us that may not come right out and say it, but that wants to believe that my accomplishments are slightly more important than yours. The ego is that part of us that wants to be seen, heard, respected, considered special, often at the expense of someone else. It's the part of us that interrupts someone else's story or impatiently waits their turn to speak so that they can bring the conversation and attention back to themselves. To varying degrees, most of us engage in this habit, much to our own detriment. When you immediately dive in and bring the conversation back toward yourself, you can subtly minimize the joy that person has in sharing, and in doing so, create distance between yourself and that person. Everyone loses.
30. My father is a PhD holder and a lovable eccentric. When my husband and I were dating, he would come to my house to pick me up and find my father on our roof. Dad was re-roofing at the time. Dad would yell down a greeting to my boyfriend at the time and actually carry on conversations with him from the roof. At first, my boyfriend thought that he was talking with a carpenter, but soon he was surprised to learn that it was my father. He was so amused by this white-bearded professor and their rooftop chats that he immediately began calling him the Mad Doctor to all of his friends. The name eventually leaked out, and luckily my father liked it. Over the years, Mad Doctor was shortened to M.D. 16 years later, my son loves calling him M.D., just like his father.
31. Children's stories are written by adults. The writer tries to identify with what children feel and how they think. Children don't give explanations to the adult world. They don't leave written records. As they grow up, they allow themselves to forget the intensity of their feelings. From a mature perspective, it's comforting to remember childhood as innocent, simple, sweet, safe. Children's stories that work are not innocent, simple, or sweet, but the child usually ends up safe. Adult books can end in death and despair, but that is taboo for children's stories. Perhaps this is because adults can detach themselves and say, "It's just a story," while children feel the power of stories that communicate real fears. They need to counteract this by ending with hope.
I knew of a small boy who was born in a little country town with no advantages, but he always felt successful. He had the conviction that when he grew up, he would be a big artist. No one could discourage him because he represented success. He had only thoughts of success. He radiated success. At an early age, he left the small town and went to a big city, and to support himself, he got a position as a newspaper artist on a daily paper, all this without previous preparation. It never occurred to him that it could not be done. He went to an art school and immediately became a shining light. He never studied in an academic way. Whatever he once saw, he remembered. In a few years, he went to a still larger city and became a well-known artist. This success came to him because he was always seeing success.
Almost everyone has heard the story of Clever Hans, a horse who could, at the command of his trainer, not only count but add and subtract. Hans skillfully pawed out the correct answers to mathematical questions put to him. Unfortunately, investigators discovered that the horse was actually reacting to unconscious signals from his trainer to stop his pawing at the appropriate place. In reality, he could neither count nor do arithmetic. Poor Hans. This case put researchers on the alert for other instances where trainers or scientists inadvertently gave signals that observant animals could detect in order to solve the problems put to them. In fact, research mistakes based on such miscues have been given the name of Clever Hans errors. With Clever Hans in mind, researchers are ever on the lookout for poor research or exaggerated claims.
34. In the town where I grew up, I worked at a local pizza chain. Here I learned this. A customer asks for a pizza. 20 minutes later, you hand that pizza to that customer. But pizza by the slice isn't like that at all. You never know who is going to want a slice, yet you have to make a pizza in advance, as the whole point for the customer is to be in and out in considerably less than 20 minutes. The meaning of pizza by the slice, the meaning that hit me at 16, is that with a large enough crowd, unpredictable events become predictable. On any given day, you no longer have to know who will want pizza to be certain that someone will want pizza. And once the certainty of demand is divorced from the individual customers and remanded to the aggregate, whole new classes of activity become possible. More generally, the likelihood of an event is the probability of it happening times the frequency with which it might happen.
35. The reliance on musical notation in Western classical music has given extraordinary powers of control and authority to the composer. He or she, like an architect, can dictate every small detail in the musical blueprint, the score, and it is up to the carpenter, the performer, to execute them. In non-Western cultures, however, the composer and performer are usually one and the same person, as in the case of Ravi Shankar. A piece of music comes into being only at the time of performance. The conductor is there to unify the emotional response of the orchestra and provide a single coherent interpretation of the piece, rather than many different interpretations. Similarly, there is no conductor in non-Western cultures, no one who directs and does not produce sound. Even in the large Balinese gamelan, in which many instrumental parts have to be coordinated, the leader is one of the performers, usually one of the drummers.
36. Henry Kissinger, when he was Secretary of State, used an indirect method to get his message across. A young, very ambitious member of his staff once prepared a position paper, which was returned by Kissinger with a note reading, "Is this the best you can do?" A. The totally frustrated junior diplomat sent a letter saying he couldn't possibly do better and therefore he was offering his resignation. Kissinger wrote back, "Since this is the best you can do, I will now read it." B. The young man burned the midnight oil for several nights and resubmitted the new and improved version. Again, a note came back. "Is this the best you can do?" C. Once more, the young man knocked himself out to comply. When he got the third note with the same comment, it was the straw which broke the camel's back.
Information has always been the key resource in our lives. It has allowed us to improve society, medical care, and decision-making, to enjoy personal and economic growth, and to better choose our elected officials. A. Conflicting viewpoints are more readily available than ever, and in many cases, they are spread by people who have no regard for facts or truth. Many of us find we don't know whom to believe, what is true, and what has been modified. We don't have the time or expertise to do research on every little decision. B. It is also a fairly costly resource to acquire and handle. As knowledge becomes more available and decentralized through the Internet, the notions of accuracy and authoritativeness have become clouded. C. Instead, we rely on trusted authorities, newspapers, radio, TV, books, sometimes the neighbor with the perfect lawn, the cab driver who dropped you at the airport, your memory of a similar experience. Sometimes these authorities are worthy of our trust, sometimes not.
The Eskimos believe that dogs don't have a soul unless they are given a name. The special names that give a dog a soul are actually human names, and often the name of a deceased relative. Only a few dogs are given these precious names. These lucky dogs are taken into the home and are usually better fed and treated more like pets than the dogs who simply pull sleds and work. The Eskimos do need some way of identifying each of the common working dogs, so each of these dogs receives a sort of label. These may be based upon their physical characteristics, such as gray, blackie, long tooth, spotted tail, or brute, or upon their abilities or behavior, such as runner, sleepy, happy, or braveheart. These identifying tags, however, aren't really names, and according to Eskimo tradition, do not carry with them a soul.
39. During the 1930s, it became fashionable among members of various U.S. alpine clubs to climb the highest point in each of the continental 48 states. The highest of all was Mount Whitney in California at 4,418 meters, 14,496 feet. The lowest, Iron Mountain in Florida, at 100 meters, 330 feet. No one would doubt that Whitney is truly a mountain, but there is considerable question about Iron Mountain. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines a mountain as a landmass which projects conspicuously above its surroundings and is higher than a hill. By this definition, Iron Mountain may be properly named, but most of us would judge this an exaggeration and regard it as a hill. At the opposite extreme, there is the story of a British climber in the Himalayas who asked his Sherpa guide the names of several of the surrounding 3,500-meter, 11,500-foot peaks. The guide shrugged his shoulders, saying that they were just foothills with no name.
40. Recent research suggests that evolution of humans' relationship with dogs altered the structure of both species' brains. One of the various physical changes caused by domestication is a reduction in the size of the brain, 16% for horses, 34% for pigs, and 10 to 30% for dogs. This is because, as Temple Grandin puts it, once humans started to take care of these animals, they no longer needed various brain functions in order to survive. Animals who were fed and protected by humans did not need many of the skills required by their wild ancestors and lost the parts of the brain related to those capacities. A similar process occurred for humans, who seem to have been domesticated by wolves. About 10,000 years ago, when the role of dogs was firmly established in most human societies, the human brain also shrank by about 10%. The process of domestication led to a reduced brain size of species tamed by humans, who experienced the same change.
Students sometimes wonder what proportion of their papers should be quoted material and what should be original words of their own. At one extreme, their papers might consist of lengthy quoted passages, stitched together with a few transitions of their own, as if writing were like assembling a patchwork quilt out of fragments of others' cloth. At the other extreme, students might quote only once, leaving most of their paragraphs without quotations, which serve as illustration or evidence. Either extreme is disproportionate. Think of quoting as a valuable means of developing and supporting ideas, not as the means of presenting the ideas themselves. In some cases, quotations will be the best form your evidence could take, and neglecting to include relevant quotations could mean neglecting to provide convincing illustrative material. When you are revising your paper, read through it once without reading the quoted words. If your paper makes little sense without the quotations, you've probably attempted to make them do too much. Your words should present your argument. The quotations are only supportive material, valuable and essential to convincing your reader, but never the primary means of presenting information.
Brad Acheson wanted to get away. He had just graduated from college, and although he was in debt, he figured that he could afford a one-week vacation. He heard that it didn't cost that much to travel to Mexico, and the dollar was doing particularly well there. He figured that he would spend most of his time on the beach, which shouldn't be too expensive. And he thought this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get away before job responsibilities set in. B. At first, Miguel did not know quite what to say, but he knew he had to say something. He didn't want to antagonize Brad, but he also felt that he shouldn't ignore the comment. So, Miguel spoke up. "Look, man, what you don't know about Mexico is obvious. That siesta stuff is so old. Don't you know anything about the country you're going to?" Brad replied, "Look, I don't know a lot about Mexico, but let's face it, I'm not on this trip to get a lecture. I'm going to have fun." C. A bit of awkwardness developed between the two men. But Miguel, a newly certified public school teacher, wanted to take this opportunity to explain to Brad some cultural facts about Mexico. He described dating rituals, the roles of women and men, and the importance of the family in Mexico. Brad listened attentively to what Miguel had to say about his culture. He also felt embarrassed. Brad realized that he should have informed himself about Mexican culture before leaving on the trip. He was grateful to Miguel and hoped he hadn't offended him too much by his ignorance. D. As he waited at the airport for his plane to Mexico City, Brad sat next to Miguel, a 22-year-old Mexican who is going to college in the United States. As guys who were around the same age, Miguel and Brad hit it off immediately. They talked about college life and their mutual interest in cycling. But the following comment by Brad caused Miguel to think twice about his newfound acquaintance. "Man, you Mexicans know how to relax. I'd love to take a siesta every day."